This is a special presentation by the Radio Players on WSIU.
The clash between fathers and sons is a tale as old as time. In the myth of Icarus, an impetuous youth flies too close to the sun, melting the wax, holding feathered wings together. Brash youth ignores the warning of his father, Daedalus, who crafted the means of escape from the labyrinth they're trapped in. The maturity of the father allows him to navigate a safe escape to Sicily. Never can Daedalus find true freedom when his son is forever lost in the Iberian Sea. Always the sorrow of loss tethers him. Hopes and dreams of the generations have been fraught with entanglements since families began. Let us meet the cast of Higher Heights. I'm Elizabeth Donahue, and I'll be the narrator.
I'm Christopher Thundy, and I will be Icarus.
I'm Kevin Rathundi, and I'll be Daedalus.
Higher Heights, a radio play by Steve Falcone. Scene 1. The stench of this place is exceeded only by its dank atmosphere. Let us not forget that legendary bellow. As if anyone might. The very reason for this labyrinth, with endless rounds of wandering confusion, unless one knows a way out. Daedalus does. The master craftsman tasked by King Minos to construct a boundless maze to cloak his shame forever from view. He sounds now the issue of the king's wife, Pasiphae, and a bull Minos failed to sacrifice to the god Poseidon. The angered deity cursed the king's wife to fall in love with the bull. Upon completing this wonder of duplicity, Minos confined Daedalus in a prison of the master's own making as the only one who knew the way out. Bitter irony of ironies. A cruel ruler by any measure, Minos also caged the craftsman's son, Icarus, as well. The king has the exit guarded to prevent escape from within. What a mythic mess. Hard-pressed might one be to believe the stooped figure, all but limping forward, is responsible for this confusion of stone with its shifting walls. Time in his own creation has not treated Daedalus well. The cheeks are weathered, the face still handsome, if gaunt. A shock of white hair still shifts in the wind. Full beard graces the chin. A thin smile spreads across his lips as he looks to the far end of the lane in search of that child who's not strayed far from his sire's side since birth. The old one speaks.
Come, boy. There is much yet to be done before our journey commences. Your mother might have taught you politeness I've overlooked, punctuality foremost among them.
Daedalus glances up.
Soon Apollo mounts his chariot, and the passage of heaven's orb begins. We dare not on this of all days be held tardy.
The old man begins to pace a slow, fitful circle, punctuated by deep sighs and slow steps.
Little he perceives, overwhelmed as he is by impetuous youth, just how old I am. Life flows swiftly from me. He has so much before him and must be freed from this confinement to grasp all that awaits. His release is my final paternal obligation. Alack, he comes overwrought as ever with mindless enthusiasm.
Scene 2. A comely lad of sturdy build and blonde locks billowing in the wind races down the lane, flapping arms wildly as he comes. This spectacle can be none other than Icarus.
Fly with me, father.
Daedalus puts his finger to his lips.
Peace, child. There are ears everywhere.
Fret not, father. Soon enough our words shall soar far above these walls.
Daedalus shakes his head.
I fear such a feat lies beyond my years.
Might amount the clouds alone, foregoing your wisdom?
My life has but one final purpose, to liberate my child from this dungeon of his father's doing.
Oh, all fault lies with Minos, cruel ruler as ever was known. He left you little choice but do his bidding. Still, we shall claim our victory as I soar above his wrath.
Daedalus smiles thinly.
A glorious moment of triumph over evil, my son, so long as you heed my warning not to fly too high on feathers bound together by beeswax and thread. Heat from the heaven's orb should waste no time melting that wax.
An admonishment burned into my brain by repetition.
Father. Well, take heed that youthful exuberance does not leave heat burned into your wings. I do fear your reckless nature, my child.
I eagerly await instruction.
'Tis that eagerness troubles me so.
I shall take every precaution, but do hurry with my wings, father.
Take heed of the terror that looms before you. Vigilance must be paid to the present.
Oh, every bend and passage I've charted from birth. No creature shall ever trap me within.
Pride goeth before a fall. Humility nurtures alertness.
Must all of my traits be faults, father?
Forgive an old man's doting concern for his last heart's beat. You are all that I hold dear.
What of your love for mother?
So long a time now I have not seen that sweet woman. Distance dulls the ache of separation. Oh, I miss her comfort in her absence.
You never speak of her. To me, she is but a scented warmth, a pleasing tune drifting in and out of memory. Does she live?
Oh, lives and thrives, last I heard of her.
Where is she?
At the palace of Minos at Gnosis. Perhaps it is now time you knew that Naucrates has always been a slave at the king's court. And his mistress.
But she is your wife!
She is, but the king holds dominion over all his subjects to treat as he pleases, and we are helpless before his power.
Not forever shall he subjugate my mother. As I fly above Gnosis, I shall swoop down and destroy this tyrant.
Daedalus shakes his head.
You mustn't even consider approaching the palace at Minos. He would dearly love to destroy you.
Icarus flaps his arms.
I intend to keep beyond his reach, hovering above him and his minions.
Icarus races down the maze, arms flapping.
My feet already lift from the earth.
Daedalus shakes head.
Must youth ever run beyond itself?
Scene 3. Daedalus is busily attaching bird feathers together with beeswax and thread when a blurry shape forms in the distance. The craftsman pauses mid-task to peer down the path before him. As the shape moves closer, Daedalus discerns a female figure.
Naucrates. My love?
Still, the form closes on the craftsman, who takes a step forward as the minotaur appears. Stopping Daedalus in his tracks, the figure holds out a hand, only to be set upon by the beast who devours her.
Ah! No! No!
The beast looks up, torso in its jaws, and drags the screaming woman away.
No! Fact or phantasm, you are gone from me. We must seek gentler climes at once.
Scene 4. Icarus comes flapping down the lane, fully winged and ready for flight.
Caw! 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 I am a great creature of the heavens, about to lift into the ether.
Daedalus puts his fingers to his lips.
Softly, child. We are not yet free of the beast in this region.
Oh, soon enough he shall seem but a dot below, as we soar off to save mother.
Daedalus wipes tears from his eyes.
Pleased these old eyes shall be to leave such roomy darkness behind.
Imagine my delight to have you up to fly with me.
The terrain grows smaller each day, ever closing in upon me. I dare not tarry longer.
He fits his wings.
To provide guidance for you aloft gave weight to my decision.
Parental wisdom on high.
Oh, we should do well to keep our wits about us on this journey.
Icarus flaps his wings.
Oh, wits in the wind, little to hinder us as we rise.
A steady course must be kept in and out of air currents and wind drifts. so many unknown elements to adapt to in flight.
Icarus looks up.
Heaven's orb shines upon us, Father.
An invitation for those daring enough to ascend.
Count us most assuredly among that number.
Foremost, we must be numbered with those who move cautiously among the clouds.
Icarus flaps wildly.
Oh, let us link with the birds.
He lifts off, his father behind him. Scene 5. Father and son aloft, the boy slips deftly in and out of cloud banks. The old one all but frozen in flight, eyes trained straight ahead, not daring to glance below.
What's that Olympus to the left?
Don't look down! You might so easily disorient yourself. No, ahead, with a steady gaze. The home of the gods reigns far above, to the north of us.
Icarus banks left.
What joy to float through a cloud's wispy mist, then re-enter blue sky once again, to soar where no man has gone before.
That none of our kind has scaled these climbs before should strengthen our resolve to take only the safest measures as we proceed.
Why so dispirited, Father? See how the heavenly globe smiles upon us. Let us greet him courteously.
Stay, impetuous boy! Though he be a god, his warmth is well beyond us. 'Tis to our benefit to maintain a reverent distance.
Oh, surely such brightness implies a welcome invitation to come closer.
Pay heed to your wings, whose very preservation depends upon the beeswax's continued adherence to the feathers.
Oh, I've no fear for my fate, with my safety secure in the handiwork of my father.
Speak not such boastful tones. Hubris rankles the gods when men rate themselves so highly.
Do they not glory at the sight of men taking such lofty strides?
They take pleasure in our deeds when achieved with modesty. We dare not incur their wrath.
Icarus glides out of a cloud.
What ill will might be harbored by a deity who casts his light so freely?
You know so little of life and the gods, my child. Aloft or below, one must strive to be steady on life's path!
Icarus flies higher.
Does Apollo shine his light on those in disfavor? I think not, Father.
Icarus wings higher.
Come bask in his warm glory.
Descend! Obey your elder while there is yet time. Heat is our enemy. Apollo's rays not your friend.
Have you ever felt freer, Father?
My exhilaration is tempered by concern for the beeswax that softens under the sun. Give heed to an old man's prayer, true beat of my heart.
Icarus somersaults.
We are newborn to a better life.
Unstop your ears, unruly youth. Heed me while you still have breath.
I am at the whim of the winds, dear one. Let them toss me where they will.
Hear my final plea. Your future hangs in the balance. Descend at once. It is a certainty that your wax wanes under the sun's intensity. Drop down to this calmer level. Should the gods truly smile upon you, there is just time to alight on the isle ahead, known for long life in its populace.
Daedalus opens his wings.
Come to me, child! My wings are spread to receive you!
I attend you anon. One last assault on the clouds.
No!
Icarus somersaults as a wing loosens and falls off, sending Icarus tumbling wildly below.
Father!
No! You are beyond me now, my life's blood. All my hopes and dreams for your future out of reach. Gone to the depths of the Aegean. Oh, my heart dies with you, drowned in tears of regret. I share in the hubris and am punished by the gods' full measure. My future remains shrouded by dark clouds from which there is no escape. No elderly wisdom foresaw this tragedy. Mere hindsight teaches me this life lesson that I must not, cannot, shall not ever forget.
A folktale as old as fabric is, The Emperor's New Clothes, We love to laugh at how foolish the Emperor is to be built by such a scam. Can't get much more taken than naked. All for fear of being thought too dumb to see the finely spun silk. Is the monarch alone in his naivete? How often are any of us swayed against our own judgment by public opinion? A glance in any direction proves the point today. We dwell in a fool's paradise. Heed the Emperor's lesson well. Check the price tag before you buy. But first, let's meet the cast of Fashionista.
I'm Peg Falcone. I'll be the narrator.
I'm Kevin Rothundi, and I'll be Emperor Cyrus.
I'm Eric Billingsley. I'll be Lord Bellum and Lord Wolford.
I'm Kelly Rothundi, and I will be Theodora and a crowd voice.
I am Christopher Rothundi, and I will be Leo and Kenrick.
I'm Elizabeth Donahue, and I will be Ursula and a crowd voice.
I'm Steve Falcone. I will be a crowd voice and Roland.
Fashionista, a radio play by Steve Falcone. Scene one. Many an emperor might have been a superior warrior or strategist on the field of battle to Emperor Cyrus. None could ever best him in the field of fashion. Hut bod was whispered behind his back. Cy was a dandy of a dresser, a true clothes horse, not a term ever used in the regal presence. Clothes meant everything to this monarch, as we shall soon see. Lord Bellum, Minister of War, rushes in.
Soil! The Faustians are rattling sabers again!
Belly, is this fabric too snug?
But Majesty, the Faustians!
The who?
The Faustians, our sworn enemies! They threaten our northern border!
Which one is that again, Belly?
Beyond your glass, sire.
Oh, there is nothing beyond my glass, Belly. The glass is all. Well, it reflects me.
Preens.
Oh, dash it all, man. Deal with these intruders. Are you not the Minister of War?
Belly nods.
Well, as Minister of War, do as you see fit. You've always resolved these incidents amicably in the past. Time to do so once more. Do let me know how things turn out, though. I shall be hosting the Royal Autumn Ball. Wonderful night for the event, don't you think?
Belly nods.
Well, off you go, then. Oh, hand me that sash before you depart. Oh, there's a good fellow.
Peacock that he was, Cyrus had an outfit for every hour of the day. Instead of saying of Cyrus that he is in his chamber, people said he is in his dressing room. Such thoroughgoing vanity provides ripe soil for swindlers. Scene two. Into the lively realm of Emperor Cyrus one sunny day trod two shifty types, Theo and Leo. Miscreants with a scam to sell. Weavers, they claimed to be. Charlatans they were, most certainly. Theodora moved with a silken grace and spoke most eloquently.
A Hamlet to my liking, full of soft touches. Gullibility is in the air.
Oh, your nose always knows, love. Sniffers never amiss. Give us a kiss.
Theodora swats him.
Behave yourself, fool. Our image is on display.
Leo raises wineskin to his lips.
And stow that skin from public display. We are weavers, here to ply our wares in this festive burg. 'Tis ripe here for the fabulous fabric above all others.
Stretches out her arms that hold nothing between them.
Yes, the magic fabric.
Don't just stand there. Pull out the loom and begin.
Begin?
To weave those magnificent fabrics to clothes.
Mimes holding up fabric.
Have you ever seen reds of such a stunning hue or more subtle blues?
Yes. So true. So very true.
Louder.
Gorgeous. Heavenly. Oh, my God.
A woman walks by, stops, and stares.
Oh, magical fabric, madam. Something completely new. This material can only be seen by those fit for the office they hold, not by those unfit or impossibly overdull. What do you think?
Flummox, the woman, calls her husband over.
Roland, come see these luxurious fabrics. for intelligent eyes only.
Yes, just so. Stunning.
Soon, a crowd is gathered to ooh and ah at the empty shuttle, weaving nothing in the wind.
Would that we could offer this glorious fabric to all. Alas, it is to be a suit of clothes for the emperor himself. He must look his best for an impending official occasion. For this purpose, we now approach the palace to complete this magnificent ensemble.
Emperor Cyrus.
Yeah, long live that guy.
And that's how charlatans became the emperor's fake clothiers. Scene 3. Cyrus muses outside the huge ballroom given to Theo and Leo for weaving purposes, along with an enormous amount of money paid by Cyrus, who bought the Swindler's line to provide a stunning suit of clothes. If we could but read the emperor's thoughts.
What have I bargained for, I wonder? Well, they seem to be about their business, but what manner of business? Cloth that is not seen by anyone stupid or unfit for their post, so they claim. Well, I have no doubts about myself, but still, I must judge my court for its authenticity. Yes. I should like to know how those weavers are getting on. It would never do for the emperor to appear to be spying on those that he's paid such a handsome sum. I shall send my faithful oldest minister to observe the weavers. Yes, he has been my eyes and ears for eons. But by his reaction, I shall have a better assessment of the situation. Yes. Let us send Wilfred to do the deed.
Scene 4. No less than the Emperor's Chamberlain, Lord Wilfred, stands before the huge loom as his shuttle flies, stunned to silence by what he sees, or doesn't see.
Heaven help us, I can't see a thing.
Oh, be good enough to step forward, Lord Chamberlain, for a clearer view. Fabric of this quality deserves our very best angle. Even my eyes aren't what they once were.
Oh, leave the man in peace for a moment, love, that he may focus his thoughts on the matter at hand. Is it not a thing of grace and elegance? Breathtaking, ravishing, stunning?
Never before had the Chamberlain been in such a verbal dilemma. This was a minister who had seen several wars and a few beheadings. How best to handle the matter with tact?
I see little, if anything, to deprive the Emperor of his majesty here, truly.
Oh, won't you come closer, Chamberlain, for a purer look at this fine fabric?
Not necessary, I assure you. These old eyes are as keen as they ever were.
Oh, how wonderful! And at your age, then you perceive fully the billowing beauty of this garment in process?
All that is to be seen, I observe. I must really depart now. Most important cabinet meeting would not do for me to miss it.
Oh, we understand, Lord Chamberlain. Business is business, after all. You'll not forget to relay a favorable report to the Emperor, I trust.
My report shall be as thorough as I may honestly convey, sir.
Now, the blunt fact is that more money is needed to proceed further with the Emperor's garment.
A vital subject, though a delicate one, money so often is. I shall broach the matter to Cyrus at the first opportunity.
Oh, do not dally too long on the matter, I implore you, my lord, or the shuttle shall be flying empty of fabric.
Lord Wilfred blinks and bites down hard on his tongue to keep from speaking. With a curt nod, he pivots on his heel and departs. Scene 5. The old Lord Chamberlain returns to his emperor a masterpiece of diplomatic reportage. He says little. He means less.
My oldest and most trusted minister relays a message of little content and less importance. I can but assess that all goes well with the Luma, weaving a way to a glorious suit of clothing for me. More funds were spoken of, always more. Do they imagine royal coffers replenish themselves, refill by magic? Well, so it must be if I am to have my suit of glory. Still, I have my doubts about this transaction. What to do? Well, if old eyes don't see, perhaps younger ones will, yes. Time to assign Alaric the Younger to this odd occurrence. A sharp mind, this minister of worth, the very one to appoint to this mission.
Into the loom room, Alaric spryly strides, prepared to encounter whatever might befall. It is still a shock to observe the empty shuttle throttle away, weaving nothing. No fabric on the loom, not a stitch of cloth or color to be seen by the lad's young eyes. Alaric's mind, however, was still sharp and politically incisive. Were he to report seeing nothing, he would be deemed unfit for his post. Can't have that. Just beginning his career at court. Best to deliver a most sterling report and second the request for more funds. Ever more funds. No surprise there. The cost of true regal garments, all agree. Scene 7. With glowing reports from young and old, Cyrus sees little recourse but to suit up in his new holiday clothing. He, too, is willing to trust the reports, skimpy as they are, of the beauty of his glorious garment. Scene 8.
Hey.
Hey. Yeah. At last, the grand day arrives, a soft, sunny afternoon to the delight of the emperor, who strides forth and is altogether naked to any willing to admit it. Not a very large group, to be sure. In fact, all are struck silent by the sun or any other circumstance as Emperor Stylus styles his latest fashion, body in full view of his subjects, who utter not a word at the stunning sight. But for Ursula, a cranky old crone purported to be a witch, who blurts,
"What reason has our sovereign to show himself so? To ward off evil spirits? Summon rain for the crops? Do tell us your purpose, Majesty."
"Let us deal with this insolent hag. Away with her. Slice off her tongue."
"I punish the lady for speaking true."
"He is but a child who knows not what he says."
"You too. Not so young, I don't know what nudity is. I sees it every night when I undresses for bed. And that man is naked. He has nothing on."
Emperor Cyrus stops. Looks at himself.
"The lad is right. I am naked. Without the common sense to know it. And I'm cold."
Shows his arm.
"Look at these goose bubbles. Well, do not look any lower. I command you."
"You need some clothes."
"I do indeed, young man. So good of you to notice."
"But shall I hold your train higher, man?"
"No, you clod. Get me some clothes of real fabric. I'm freezing."
Immediately, Majesty. Shall we meet the minister from Smolensky?"
"No, you numbskull! Bring me pants, a shirt, a cap. All else can wait until I'm warm." "And you bring that lad to me. He shall be a minister."
Lord Wilfred's fingers his beard.
"No, I should say he is too young yet for the cabinet."
"Should I say that you are too old?"
I shall fetch him at once, Majesty."
The crowd cheers as Cyrus is clothed. Well,
perhaps we have all learned a lesson here. Keep your wits about you and your pants on.
You've been listening to a special presentation of Higher Heights and Fashionista by the Radio Players on WSIU, an original production written and produced by Steve Falcone. This production was taped live in the WSIU studios, post-production, sound design by Honey Scoopwood. Support for the local arts is made possible by listener support. WSIU is powered by you.